In your groups, we talked about many of the concepts that Susan discussed, and questions were brought up, and we got those questions, and we're going to ask some of them now, and we may not be able to get to all the questions because we were, quite frankly, overwhelmed with the number of questions, but that's pretty exciting. So before we get started, I do want to let you know that Barbara Ann and myself and the women's ministry at Christ Presbyterian Church, we would love to be a resource for you. If you have a question or something that didn't get answered, and you are welcome to contact us, and we will try to help you find that answer, or we will be willing to talk with you about it on the phone. So please feel free to do that. So let's get started. Barbara Ann Kelly to my left, and of course you all know who this lovely lady is. And so we're just going to tag team each other back and forth asking questions, and I'm going to let Barbara Ann go first with the first one.
All right. Well, Jana was right when she said we have a lot of questions, and we won't be able to get to all of them, but we also had a lot that really overlapped. There was a lot of intersection. And so I'm going to start with a whole stack of cards that are basically asking the same thing. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
How? Okay. Let's elaborate. How can we be life givers if we lack the confidence or we give in to fear? How does one get started with spiritual mothering, especially when you feel terribly inadequate? Is it possible or advisable for a spiritually mature younger woman to mentor an older woman who's a new believer? Or how does a younger woman initiate a relationship with an older woman? We also had, how do we draw the young women in? So we have younger women who are looking to initiate relationships. We have older women who are desiring to draw the younger women in. And also from all different settings of life. Some are in the home, some are in work. Different stages of life. So how do we combine these women who are so different, respectfully approaching, teaching and encouraging with biblical gender distinctiveness? Those are fighting words, aren't they? Reaching the younger moms busy with children at home, building relationships. Are you sensing a theme? And then the last one for this theme, help.
Thank you. I love this question. I love that it came in so many different forms, but it is basically the same question. And what I want to do is walk you through, and hopefully that will at least give you enough that you feel like when you leave here, it's not just all up in the air, and how do we go about doing this? First of all, there will be situations and opportunities where you just spontaneously, there you are in a situation. Just like with Hannah, Ruth was there. And they're just situations like that. And we just need to be available. I'm not going to say be ready, because whoever feels ready for this, but be available and trust the Lord to enable us to step into that situation. However, I still come back to, if a women's ministry in a church establishes a Titus II discipleship ministry, you train people for it, then it becomes a way of life, and women do have the confidence, and women find each other, older, younger, professional women, stay-at-home moms, all of them. So let me tell you sort of what that looks like. My suggestion is, if there's some of you here from a church and you're thinking, we'd like to start this, start by perhaps just the two of you or three of you or whatever it would be, reading together spiritual mothering. Get a real handle on what this is all about. You may also want to read together women's ministry in the local church to get the bigger picture. And then, just all through this time, as you're just reading a chapter and coming together and praying over it, discussing it together, asking the Lord what He wants it to be in your church, take your time. Do not rush this. Take your time to pray it through. And then there'll be perhaps going to the leadership of the church. And I think we have another question later on about the leadership, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But then once you get to the point that you think you're ready to actually begin a ministry in your church, the manual, Titus 2 Tools, takes you step by step through what to do. You want to hold that up? It first helps you just work through the various options. There are various ways you can set up a ministry. So much will depend upon the structure of your church. It needs to fit into whatever your church is doing. But by looking at those various models, you'll be able to craft what model works best for you. Again, I say that I think the small group model is best to begin with, at least. Think about it. Jesus discipled a small group. And rather than trying to do one-on-one, for one thing, it's just more problematic. Usually what happens is you will have more people who want a spiritual mother than you have women who are willing to be spiritual mothers. So there you've got a problem. But if you're setting it up in small groups, then you only need perhaps one woman as the nurturer, facilitator, spiritual mother for maybe six women. So that helps right there. But there's also, I think it's not as intimidating for women that you recruit to be leaders in this. It's easier to think about a group than one-on-one. And so there are just a lot of advantages to it. There's also a dynamic that develops among the women that is helpful. And then the next thing that we recommend with this model is that you only meet once a month. And that immediately makes it more doable for more women. And perhaps you already have, but this is another thing you've got to consider what you've got going on in your church. But you may already have weekly Bible studies. Well, this can be something different that women can do both or either one. But if it's monthly and these groups are held at all different times, then it just makes it more doable. Now, as you're moving into it all through, and the manual tells you how to do this, but you've got to constantly be educating the church and the women in the church for what's coming, for the purpose of it, the reason for it. And if you say in your publicity, this is an opportunity for women to build gospel friendships, or it's an opportunity for women to develop strong covenant relationships with one another. Women are hungry for that. And so they will begin to want to be a part of that. When you recruit your leaders, oftentimes your Bible study teachers are not necessarily the best small group leaders. Bible study teachers, and that's a giftedness there, they want to get through a lesson plan. But these small groups are more relational. And so what you want to look for are women who are nurturers. Look at the women who are gatherers, who tend to just gather women to them. They're approachable. And so as you begin to approach these women, one of the things that we always find is that when we go to a woman like this who just has a mothering heart, regardless of whether she is a mother or not, and we ask her if she would do this, most of them will say, oh, I would love to, but I don't feel qualified. And our response is, good. If you're qualified, you'll depend on yourself. And none of us is qualified for this. We want you to lean hard on Jesus, and He will come through for you. And so once they begin to get that message, that it's like they are freed because this is something they've wanted to do, but they could never imagine themselves standing up in front and speaking to a lot of women. But that's not what we're asking them to do. And then when you begin establishing your, first you train your leaders. So, and everything you need to do that is right in this manual. And then when you decide to set up the groups, you get your leaders to say, when is the best time and place for them to meet? And you do some negotiating so that you've got some groups at night, some in the morning, and at least one group where there can be a nursery. So if there are women who will not have childcare, and so you make that available. For us in our church, we do one group on a Wednesday night because we have a full program going on Wednesday nights with a nursery. And so then you advertise this by the times when groups will meet. You do not tell who the leaders of each group will be. And you explain in your publicity that you're doing this because this is not a personality-driven ministry. And we do not want women just going to, oh, I like her, I think she's cute, and going to that group. But rather, we're sisters in Christ, and you will be connected to whoever's your leader because you've all been adopted into the same family. And we say that in all of our publicity. So you're educating women as to what all of this is as the process goes on. So then women sign up by the group. Now, sometimes we've had someone to have a time that no one signed up. But do you see another problem that has been alleviated? That way that leader doesn't think, oh, they didn't want me. No, they just couldn't come at that time. They don't even know who she is. And so it just solves a lot of problems. So they sign up by the time. And in your publicity ahead of time, you say, we're hoping that these groups will be just a lot of variety in there. We're not looking to match you up by the same hobbies or the same life season or any of that. We hope that there will be the richness of a lot of diversity. And one of the best groups I have ever seen had, let me see if I can remember it, but a homeschooling mom, a teacher in the public school, a young single professional woman, a retired woman, and a widow. And those women loved each other. They loved learning about what life was like for each other. And they became connected heart to heart, as it should be. So then, but your groups then, you set it up so that everyone is studying the same book. So that builds consensus, it builds unity across, because all of the groups are studying the same thing. And so they can talk to each other. Oh, you're in that group. How's that going? And your leaders can, we set up an email thread so that if leaders are having a problem, this isn't working, they can tell each other. So it's just a marvelous thing that happens when once you get this kicked in. And we suggest that women go through about 3 years of this, of course, a different book each year. And the reason we say that is because we find it takes about that long for the paradigm shift in a woman's mind where she really begins to understand biblical womanhood and the implications of biblical womanhood. And she's living it out with the women in her church. Now, I get lots of letters from all over from women who are doing this, but just last week, some women, they told me about it at leadership training, but they wrote it all out for me. Their women's ministry was pretty much dying. They had a morning Bible study and a night Bible study and occasional events, but they said the relationships among women were very surface, really no connection outside of when they were meeting for something. And then they started a Titus 2 ministry. And they've sent me pictures. They have several times more women than they had involved before in these groups, all different ages. And they said the community life among those women and across the whole church has totally changed. It works. That's all I know to tell you is it works. Oh, it seemed like there was one other. Oh, about the old. Does an older woman have to lead the group? Absolutely not. Many older women just are not in a season of life, or they don't have the giftedness that they feel like they can. But we specifically went to, when we first implemented it, we went to older women and we said, will you please be in a group so they can take advantage of your wisdom? And our leaders are trained to do that, to really draw out the older women. And in one group that we had, the youngest woman in the group was the leader. And those older women took full advantage of it. They'd say, honey, go get us some coffee. We're tired. We're old. And she loved it. She loved it. It was just great. So don't get into a box. Don't see this as, oh, we've got to do it this way. We've got to do it this way. You've got to be flexible and creative and work with your situation and the women in your situation. Now, once you start it, over time, this becomes the language of not only the women but of the congregation. It becomes a way of life, not a program, and it begins to be organic. It begins to be more one-on-one and spontaneous. And ideally, that's one sense in which you should work yourself out of a job and that you don't need to program it anymore, but that's not really the reality because you've constantly got new women coming in, and so you still need it. Did I leave anything out from that? Has that answered all of those things?
I think we're all ready to get started, right, ladies?
Just let's go. Guess, and it will give you step by step. But then, if you have questions, and I love this part, call Karen Hodge.
And she will answer the phone, or she'll call you right back. She will.
She will.
She will.
She really does.
Okay. Well, I think it's my turn, and this one might be a good one to dovetail off of that one. Help me to see how I am in God's will if I work outside the home. What about feeling guilty about this?
Yeah. Don't. If you're working outside the home, and that is what is best for you. If you're married and you and your husband have talked about it, or perhaps you are the breadwinner for your family, you should feel a lot more guilt if you're not working and your kids are starving. So I think we look at that, be workers in the home. Well, that's in opposition to what is said by Paul to Titus about the Cretans in chapter 1 when he says that they're lazy gluttons. So this is not saying to women, you're not to work outside the home. It's saying be industrious, whether it's in the home or out the home, wherever it is, don't be a lazy glutton. So that's what it's talking about. But you've got to do what's best for your family. And for many of us, we went back into the workplace as families needed, our kids needed braces, and they needed college, and they needed all these other things that were coming down the pike. So you evaluate that, and then just if you're married and if you have children, you do the best thing you can for your children. If you're not married, then obviously you need to be working because we parents don't want to be supporting you. So you need a job.
Ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. And I don't want to be supporting grandchildren either. So.
All righty. Well, that actually sort of leads to this next one. Titus 2, 3 to 5 places heavy emphasis on the roles of wife and mother. Can you speak to ways that single women of all ages, but I suspect this is younger ages, can apply this passage and fulfill their roles without feeling like our true role is not yet in play?
Yeah, I think that happens a lot with single women, whether it's never married, divorced, or widowed, that perhaps you feel as if everything is geared toward families and married women. But you remember what we talked about, how we need to think biblically? So let's think biblically about that. You see, family is not just the nuclear family of husband and wife and two or three kids, but family is us. It is the family of God, and we're all a part of the family of God. And we need to think that way and to see all of these implications in that way. And I know it's a twist in your thinking, and it's real discipline to think biblically, but that's what we're called to do. And my experience has been that women who are not married and or women who have no children or their children are grown, there is a time factor in your life that you have perhaps more time to invest in others than some do who have children in the home right now. And so I say, see your singleness or your not having children as an opportunity for you to invest even more in the family of God and to begin to see all of the children at church as your spiritual children, to see the young women as your spiritual daughters, to see older women as your spiritual mothers. Look at your church as your family and think through that biblical grid about family. I know it's hard, and especially if you're someone who wants to be married, then you've also got to push through that pain. You've got to push through trusting God with His will for your life. So understand, but think biblically.
That is the answer, isn't it, to pretty much everything? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this next question is going to take a different tone. How can I restore being the helper and life giver in my home when the resentment and bitterness are so deep and strong? Since I have been a constant life taker in my home, it seems restoration and transformation is impossible.
Nothing is impossible with God. Let's say it again. Nothing is impossible with God. Let's all say it. Nothing is impossible with God. Trust Him on that and remember that. Begin to pray. Ask for forgiveness if you truly have been a life taker. And then pray that God will do that transforming work in you. And I would do not announce, from this day forward, I'm going to be a life giver. Don't do that. You just pray. Spend time in the Word. And I would also encourage you to trust one or two other sisters, more if you've got more women that you can trust, and share that pain in your heart with them and ask them to continually remind you. Maybe they can text you every day. Nothing is impossible with God. He can restore. He can redeem. And He will redeem. It will start with Him redeeming you. And then as you begin to be kind, as you begin to speak not critical words, but life-giving words, as you begin to speak a word of encouragement, as you begin to do things that those in your home will realize, this is different. She's helping us. She's being kind. It may take time, and they may not trust it or believe it at first, but over time, and sometimes it takes a long time, but God will move that along at His pace in order to accomplish in your heart what He wants you to know. He will give you the grace to continue to be in that situation, and He will give you the strength to persevere as you're staying in His Word, as you're praying, as you're in church, as you're in Bible study, and as you're asking other women to pray for you. Those stories, those redemption stories, are so beautiful. And the very fact that you asked that question, that story has started. And I probably will not see most of you again in this lifetime, but whoever you are, when we get to heaven, please run up and tell me the rest of it, because I know it's going to be good. I know it's going to be good.
Our Jesus is in the redemption business. Okay. You sort of alluded to this earlier, But I, not me, this person, I have ladies willing to teach but not to share life. If I miss Bible study, I get fussed at, and no one asks me what was wrong.
That makes me very sad, but I know that it's a reality. And you remember when I talked about discipleship being informational, relational, and transformational? Sometimes people go to the extreme with either one of, well, with the informational or relational. Some models of discipleship, it's all about the relationship. I've even seen some, quote, Titus 2 ministries established, and it was pretty much just, we're going to match two women up who have similarities and have lunch together, do things together. But there's no content there. There's no information. That is not true Titus 2 ministry. But neither is if it's only informational, and it, if there is no life on life, then it's academic. I have a friend who is an English professor, and she says, I can go into a class, into a classroom, and I can teach my course, and I cannot even know who my students are. And that's okay. I'm giving them the information they need. But we cannot and must not teach the Bible that way. We're to know each other. It's to be life on life. And this is why I say that Titus 2 ministry is a boots on the ground ministry. If one of you came to me and said, oh, will you spiritually mother me? I can't do that. I don't live life with you. And you don't need someone from a distance speaking into your life. You need people who really know the situation. But that makes me sad, but I know it is the reality, because there are some programs where there's more emphasis on the content. I was even in a seminar on a Bible study that was to be run similar to this. And the lecturer said, do not let women come in with issues that they're facing that day and let them hijack your Bible study. And I thought, but what if she's dying inside? Now, there is a balance there. And for those of you, if you're here and you're a strong Bible teacher and you do want to get through that lesson plan, we need to think through this. And one of the ways we've developed to do that is that if a woman comes and she is in distress, usually she'll come up and tell me, or she'll come up and tell one of the other leaders, or we can spot it and see. And our practice is that at the very beginning, well, we'll ask her, is it okay if we share this with everybody? And then at the very beginning, we tell her situation, and we say, girls, gather around. We gather around. They kneel all around her, and we put our hands on her, and we pray for her. And then her stress is relieved. We stop it there. We go back. We go on with our lesson. But as we go on with our lesson, you see, that experience is right there in front of us. And so we can make application of the scripture into that situation. And yet it has not, quote, hijacked our lesson. It has not taken over, except in a good, positive way. So if you're in a Bible study like that, just I don't know what to tell you to do about that, except I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, because that is not the way that Bible study, I don't think, is to be done if we're following the Titus 2 model, if we're following the model throughout Scripture of discipling people, not just downloading information. I didn't answer that very well, but I don't know what else to say.
I think you answered it very well, and you gave me and Barbara Ann, I know, a great idea. I think that's a wonderful idea, and I can see the value of how that would work. And so thank you for
absolutely.
That. Now, back to the difficult questions. Being a life giver in difficult situations, when a sword pierces your heart and soul, when faithfulness is more important than circumstances, how does a woman live a life-giving gospel in the midst of an abusive relationship? How does that woman remain loving and gracious and forgiving while not enabling harmful, sinful patterns that the abusive person practices?
I'm so grateful for this question. First of all, my heart goes out to you and perhaps to more than one of you in asking that question. I should have covered that during the talks, and so I'm so very grateful that someone asked the question, and thank you for your courage in asking it. Headship does not mean that we submit to sin. Never. We are not being a helper and we're not being a life giver if we enable someone else to continue their sin patterns. Now, what that means in your particular situation, there's no way I can know because I don't know the situation. But I do know that you never submit to sin. But sometimes, understanding whether or not that is actually sinful and abusive behavior, or whether it just gets on my nerves, dirty socks left on the floor is not abusive behavior. And so sometimes, though, we need to help. Well, all the time, we need somebody to help us unravel it. So if you are in that situation, the thing I want most for you to hear is get help and get it quickly, sooner rather than later. You need someone to help you to unravel that, to know, is this really abusive behavior? Now, sometimes there's absolutely no question. If it's physical abuse, get out. Get out quickly. Do not stay in that. But if it's emotional or whatever, you do need help. First of all, to know, is this something that you should be putting up with and praying through, or is it something that you need to blow the whistle on that behavior? And so I would encourage you, and it almost makes me a little nervous to say this, but because I don't know all of your churches, but hopefully you can go to perhaps a woman in your church, and then hopefully she will have the wisdom to take you to the proper person there, whether it's the pastor or if there's someone on staff, or maybe you already know who that person is and you can go directly to them, but you may be hesitant. When you've been in a situation like that, you lose all of your courage. So if you can get someone to go with you, and here's another reason for women's ministry, because when we have mature women leading our women's ministry, it does gradually communicate to women who they can go to. If you're structuring your women's ministry around the kinds of concepts we've been talking about, then women know who the mature women are. They know who they can trust, and they know who they can go to and say, pray with me, and then those women will know whether they should say, we need to get you more help, or whether just for them to continue praying with you. So do not think you have to submit to sin, never, and get help to help you think through and to think biblically about what it will mean to be a life giver. And sometimes being a life giver means you've got to leave until that behavior changes.
That's good. Thank you for that good sound advice. Okay. All right. Back to you, Barbara. Oh, you're done.
I'm out.
Okay, how did I get left holding all the cards? Okay. All right. So let's see. Where's our time? Where are we on our time? 303. Do you want this? You want to get to that last one? Okay. Okay. Bear with us. One more question. I think it's important. How do you incorporate a Titus II ministry into your church when the leadership is not supportive? Is it appropriate to do it outside of the church?
I would not set up a Titus II ministry outside the church, but all of us surely have relationships with people outside the church that may be Titus II relationships. But there are many reasons that sometimes male leadership is opposed to women's ministry or to Titus II ministry. Oftentimes it's because of situations in their past. It could just be any number of things. But sometimes it's also that in the life of the church at that moment, they don't feel like it's the right time. But whatever, it is appropriate for you to have a conversation with the leadership to find out. But much depends on how you approach them. What I encourage is that you maybe read through some of Women's Ministry in the Local Church, which was co-authored with Ligon Duncan. And Ligon gave all of us a great gift in partnering with authoring that book, because we have the voice of a pastor right there. And obviously pastors will listen to pastors, and especially to one as respected as Ligon. So what you may want to do is go through there and just highlight a few of his comments, and then ask for a meeting with whether it's your pastor or discipleship leader in your church or whatever, and say, we talked about this at the conference. I'm reading where Ligon Duncan has said these things. Could we talk about the possibility of this in our church and what it could look like? And maybe even show the resources. There are plenty of resources here for us to do this, and we heard wonderful stories about the difference that it makes in women's lives and then in the life of the church. So approach in that way. But if you get turned down, then in some way that is God's will for you and for your church for right now. It may not seem so to us, but often God is calling us to be still and to wait. It may be, and this is what I find most often in my life, when things that I think we need to do this right now, God needs to work in my heart. I need to be changed before I'm ready to be a part of something like that. And so maybe the work needs to be done in you as you rest in Jesus, as you trust him for the timing, and as you ask him to build up in you all that he wants to build up and to do in you. And whether it's with a husband or with male leadership in a church, our restful waiting on the Lord to convict and convince them is not wasted time. It is good time. It is life-giving time. It's life-giving to our souls. So rest in that.
Thank you. And let me just add one thing, too. Many times the pastors have experienced, or the leadership of a church have experienced and been in other churches or somewhere where women have either hijacked and taken over and formed their own ministry, and they've gone out there and they've done things, and it's, there's kind of been we're going to do our own thing, and they can't get in there and try to shepherd and guide them, and so they're afraid that might happen. Or maybe they've come out of a church where women were pastors, and they're afraid that if they start coming up, they're going to start taking over the church. And so maybe one way to do that is try to maybe sit down and have a talk with your pastor, just to go in and just ask how he's doing, and kind of ask why he's thinking that, and then listen to what he's saying. And then also, as you do that, at the end of that conversation, ask them how you can pray for them. And then, you know what? Do it. Right then, pray for them. You will not believe what that will do. And then as you go away, be faithful to pray for them in that. And then from time to time, when you see them, ask them how they're doing. Ask them what you can do for them. I think the Lord will work through that in mighty ways. So just a tip.
Can I say one more quick thing? Also, if you're thinking, how do we get these to come to this? How do we get these to come to this? How do we get these to do this? I want to challenge you. That is a life-taking question. The question is, how can we serve the young moms? How can we serve the older women? How can we serve the women who are employed outside the home? That's a life-giving question.
It turns it upside down, doesn't it, Barbara Ann?
Right. Not how do we get them here, how do we go to them?
Yes, exactly. Well, ladies, thank you for being with us during this time. We so thank you so much. We will give a second for Susan to sit down. Do we have one more? Okay.
Yes. Our women who have children in the nursery need to pick them up before the meet and greet.
Okay.
Stephanie Bennett?
No.
Children are welcome to join the meet and greet in the EB.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, ladies. Okay. One more second. We're not quite done. I'm going to let Susan and Barbara Ann get to their seats. And then leave your ladies come up. I'm going to let them grab them. There's a system to this, and I'll mess it up. So.